we were going to be elders just because we were still around, and I was going to listen to you on a panel we didn't feel qualified for and hear you talk about your guilt for still being alive when so many of your friends were taken by suicide, by AIDS, by racist police, and jealous ex-lovers, and poverty, and no access to healthcare, or any of the other systems that stalk you and me and ours forever. I only know the pain that I am having, and that you are not here to share it. You are not here to bear it. You were going to pass me a candle at the next vigil. But now, I am Pulse. And now, you are Flame.
The violence that happened in Orlando on Sunday, the violence that happens to separate immigrant families and communities across the nation, the violence against Black lives. All of these violence, the targets are different, but the roots of violence are the same.
Instead of naming white supremacy and toxic masculinity, we instead blame disability and mental illness for gun violence. Yeah!
What did we want? And the response from the crowd was Black power. And Stokely started out by saying, what do we want? And then he answered. And then he had asked again, what do we want? And then the crowd got involved in and engaged.
What do you want? Everybody, what do you want? That's what we're going to get.
And welcome to On the Ground, Voices of Resistance, coming from the nation's capital on 89.3 WPFW, your Pacifica station for justice and jazz. I'm Esther Averam. Well, here in D.C. this week, much of the activity in the streets, suites, halls, and assemblies focused on last weekend's massacre inside the gay nightclub Pulse in Orlando, Florida. And unlike the simplistic narrative in the mainstream media, diverse populations in the DMV are exploring the intersection of anti-immigrant rhetoric, Islamophobia, and attacks on the LGBTQ community. Today, we'll hear some of these voices from a massive vigil held at DuPont Circle in Northwest D.C. And in the second half of the show, a conversation with Alexis Pauline Gums, whose poem Pulse is one of the few expressions by a queer Black person to be heard at least online after the massacre. So as always, we have a jam-packed show for you today, starting with our headlines. In Congress, this latest tragedy in the midst of election season is actually creating more discussion about a change in the country's gun laws, but the debate appears to be mired in partisan and election season politics. For example, though a majority of Americans favor a ban on assault weapons, such as the weapon used by suspect Omar Mateen in Orlando, Congress is not debating that ban. Instead, they are wrangling over a controversial legislation that would ban people on the terror watch list from being able to purchase guns. And some attention is being given to this and to universal background checks after a filibuster by Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy. All around the DMV, there were prayers, vigils, moments of silence. Outside the White House on Wednesday night, those gathered to stop the raids and deportations of immigrant families also made the links to this week's tragedy. Chantel James has more.
More than 50 participants came together for a vigil calling for an end to the Obama administration's raids on immigrant families from Central America seeking asylum in the U.S. In the wake of the tragic shooting in Orlando this past weekend, the event also commemorated the shooting and honored the victims. Organizer and MC Andrea Mercado spoke of the importance of the event.
We had originally planned a vigil against deportation raids here tonight. And after Sunday, decided that we really wanted to create space for collective mourning and also acknowledge that over half of the victims were Latinx from immigrant families, and that the same root the violence that is perpetrated against transgender and gender nonconforming individuals on the streets, the violence that happened in Orlando on Sunday, the violence that happens to separate immigrant families and communities across the nation, the violence against Black lives. All of these violence, the targets are different, but the roots of violence are the same. And we're here today to stand united in the face of violence, and that together we are stronger than those roots.
Representatives from several LGBTQ and faith-based organizations gave powerful witness at the vigil, as did immigrants whose families have been affected by the raids. There was collective singing, and participants held flowers and candles in honor of the victims of the raids and of the nightclub shooting.
De colores, de colores se visten los campos de la primavera. De colores, de colores son los pajaritos que vienen de afuera. De colores, de colores es el arco iris que debemos lucir. Y por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí. Y por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí.
This is Chantal James for On the Ground, signing off.
And just some of the other actions in our region that were connected to the Orlando massacre. Prayers were offered for Orlando at an interfaith iftar at the Potter's House in Adams Morgan at the March for Justice for Berta Cáceres, the Honduran environmental activist who was assassinated during March of this year. Speakers made the links between U.S. support of the brutal Honduran government immigration from repressive regimes such as Honduras and the immigration crisis here in the U.S. Many of those killed in Orlando were immigrants to the U.S. looking for a better life. The same for passage of a controversial bill to address Puerto Rico's debt crisis. We'll hear more voices from a huge vigil held at DuPont Circle later in the show. Now, switching gears, a few quick updates on stories we've been covering. In climate news, the Scottish Parliament has voted for a national ban on fracking, and the same vote has been taken in Butte County in California. The measure won with 71% of the vote, making Butte the fourth California county to pass such a measure, following Mendocino, San Benito, and Santa Cruz counties, and adding to the growing list of states and municipalities across the nation that have come out against fracking. Agriculture is the top industry in Butte County, which sits just north of Sacramento. Proponents of the measure argue that threatening the aquifers with toxic fracking chemicals would destroy the lifeblood of the local economy. In Black Lives Matter news, nationally, the movement continues to send support to Jasmine Abdullah, a California activist who was sentenced to jail time for attempted lynching when she attempted to free a fellow protester from the police. According to BlackLivesMatter.com, activists are working for Abdullah's release and in the meantime are accepting messages of support at the website BlackLivesMatter.com that they will pass on to her. Locally, Beverly Smith, mother of Alonzo Smith, who died in the custody of D.C. Special Police last year, is sponsoring Circle of Love and Support as a healing space for moms, dads, and persons in general, survivors who have lost a child or loved one to police brutality and or gun violence. That's next Thursday, June 23rd, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Anacostia Neighborhood Library, 1800 Good Hope Road in Southeast. For more information, call Ms. Smith on 202-378-6731 or visit the event Circle of Love and Support, COLAS, on Facebook. Also locally this week, Mayor Bowser signed legislation for the Homeless Family Shelter Plan passed unanimously on May 31st by the D.C. Council. This plan, which was revised twice after public outcry about the cost and the safety of some sites, includes new locations for the Ward 3, Ward 5, and Ward 6 sites, saving the taxpayers $165 million. At the signing ceremony at the Wilson Building, Mayor Bowser said that the plan is part of a plan to address homelessness and affordable housing.
Families in D.C. General deserve a fair shot in this town, and we can do better. We're here to say affirmatively that we will do better, and we will do all that we can to make sure that our system is working and working to prevent homelessness in D.C.
The revised plan also includes the final new shelter opening 3 years from now. And a final news update, the agreement ratified this month between 40,000 striking workers, including thousands in our region, and Verizon includes Verizon adding 1,300 new East Coast call center jobs and reverses several other outsourcing initiatives that will create new field technician jobs. The four-year proposed agreement provides 10.9% in raises, 1,250 signing bonus in the Mid-Atlantic region, and a $1,000 signing bonus plus $250 in healthcare reimbursement accounts in the Northeast. And there's also profit sharing, pension increases, and a first contract for Verizon Wireless retail store employees in Brooklyn, New York, and in Everett, Massachusetts. And that D.C. statehood convention is underway. And I think you heard it covered by Jennifer Bryan on an excellent show on Arise. And that's happening today at 6 p.m. and tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. at the Wilson High School in Northwest D.C. In our culture and media moment, the D.C. Jazz Festival is underway through Sunday, dcjazzfest.org for all info. Michael Franti performs at the Fillmore in Silver Spring tonight. And a special program last night at the African American Civil War Museum, broadcasted here on WPFW, commemorated the 50th anniversary of Stokely Carmichael Kwame Ture calling for Black Power on June 16, 1966 at a rally in Mississippi. The program was one of several hosted around the country by veterans of SNCC and their Black Power Chronicles Project, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. The organizer here in D.C. was Karen Spellman. So if you missed the program, it's available on WPFWFM.org. Go to the archives and click on Thursday, June 16th at 6 p.m., that time slot. And also, more information is at BlackPowerChronicles.org. And those are our headlines and happenings. We'll be right back with voices from the hundreds who gathered at DuPont Circle in Northwest D.C. in a vigil against homophobia, transphobia, and Islamophobia. Stay with us.
It's 11:59 and 59 seconds. If I'm gonna die tonight, I want heaven. Hey, with you. It's 11:59 and 59 seconds. If I'm gonna die tonight, I want heaven. Hey, with you. It was 11:59 and 59 clicks. The whole world's burning, but the clock just ticks over and over every single day. Some people steal while other people pray to God, to man, machines, or whatever. Some of us just lost faith altogether. No way, they say, it can't be this way. That's why so many people stand up and say, one love.
That was Michael Franti here on the ground, onthegroundshow.org. I'm Esther Averam. Well, all around the DMV, there were prayers, vigils, moments of silence to mark the massacre of 49 young men and women at a gay nightclub in Orlando. Hundreds gathered at DuPont Circle on Monday night, where a variety of communities came together to share an impromptu gathering in space where the voices of people of color were raised, as well as the complex intersectionality of race, gender, sexuality, class, religion, immigrant status, and mental health.
My name is Sahar Shafkat. I'm a founding member of Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity, which is the Muslim LGBTQ group. We're gathered here today to mourn our beloved Latino and Latina brothers and sisters whom we lost over the weekend in a horrific massacre. It turns out there were a couple of us here who were planning vigils, so we've merged our efforts, so you'll be hearing from a number of different people. I want to first turn it over to Hafiz to say a prayer for the departed.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Darakshan. I'm the person with the Muslim Women's Policy Forum that organized this after reaching out to a few of my friends after what happened in Orlando. Just to give you a little bit of what our group's idea and why we wanted to do this today is because we're seeing that the struggle to fight Islamophobia, transphobia, homophobia is being pitted against each other. After what has happened in Orlando, many politicians turned around and wanted to use it to scapegoat an entire community. And for us, for some of us who are working with folks who live at the intersection of all of it, for me, I didn't think that I had to step up and do something. So I organized this event for your other folks. And I'm really thankful that you're all here because you're rejecting the hate. You're rejecting the ways in which white supremacy pits all of us apart. You're rejecting the fact that there are people who are trying to co-opt and exploit the struggle for LGBTQ rights, and at the same time demonizing the community. So thank you so much for being here and rejecting that.
My name is Lisbeth Melendez Rivera, and I'm a Latina, and I'm a butch dyke. And I live my life proudly with my wife, who happens to also be half Muslim. Lisa, where are you?
Woo!
Yeah. Can you come up?
Dale, Lisa.
I bring her up because, first of all, I need her right now with me. Second, because I knew some of these names. Third, because your love right now keeps our community together. Como latinos, somos una sociedad, una pequeña comunidad. Somos pequeños, somos poderosos, estamos conectados y no nos vamos a quedar callados. Déjame repetirlo. Soy latina, soy butch, soy una dyke. Me dicen butch en algunos sitios. La conversación este fin de semana en mi casa fue esa intersección. Lo que es ser católica, lo que es ser musulmana, lo que significa que tantas veces nuestras religiones se utilizan para rechazarnos. Conversations in my home this weekend were about what it is to be Muslim, what it is to be Catholic, what it is to live at the intersections of all of who we are. And understanding that for as much as people want to claim that our faith rejects us, we know that they adore us. We know that they accept us. And it might not be in the moment, but we are familia. And we will always be familia. And every single one of you is familia to us. Because we're queer, because we're beautiful, because we're here to speak for those who no longer can. And for those who were working in Orlando to build a better Orlando, a better Central Florida, please, for those of you who speak Spanish, my own prayer. Padre nuestro que estás en el cielo, santificado sea tu nombre. Venga a nosotros tu reino, hágase tu voluntad, así en la tierra como en el cielo. Danos hoy nuestro pan de cada día, perdona nuestras ofensas, como también nosotros así perdonamos a los que nos ofenden. No nos dejes caer en tentación, mas líbranos del mal. Because Christianity is as much mine as Islam is as much all of ours. And so please, please understand, religion is not the enemy, but the men who speak for it need to be educated. And that's our job from now on. Thank you. Gracias, Lisbeth. I want to begin with healing words from the Hindu tradition. You may call it a prayer or simply a call to action. Asatoma satkamaya. Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritam Gamaya, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Lead us from untruth to truth. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality. May there be peace, peace, and more peace. The untruth that is being manufactured and perpetuated through this tragedy by the mainstream media is that guns don't kill people, Islam or Muslims kill people. This is an untruth that I am ashamed to say has been held up by my Hindu community time and time again. No matter what the facts may be, mainstream Hindu community and even self-proclaimed progressive groups do their part in perpetuating this untruth by not standing up against it. Tonight, as a Hindu and as a member of the LGBT community, I condemn this untruth. I, as a Hindu, ask my larger Hindu community to confront their own Islamophobia. When you hear somebody say, how come it's always Muslims doing these things, as I continuously hear in my community, I'd remind them that that's just simply untrue. That of the 998 shootings in Sandy Hook, two were perpetrated by shooters with Muslim names. Or as I would offer, people that simply have too easy access to guns. No faith condones violence against innocent people. Rather, all paths lead to truth. Ekam sat vipraha bhauta vadanti. My tradition also teaches me. When you go to your mandir or Hindu community gathering or any of your places of worship and hear these untruths against our Muslim brothers and sisters, I ask you to demand a forum for discussion, to better understand Islam, to make space for interfaith dialogue, to take time to read the Quran, to take time to fight for gun reform. The darkness that I refer to is the invisibility, similar to what Lisbeth spoke about, that many of us as LGBTQ people face within our religious communities. I urge my Hindus that identify as heterosexual or straight to ask respectful questions about homosexuality. Ask questions of us. Take the time to learn. Create spaces at places of worship or even social gatherings to talk about LGBTQ people. Yesterday, I got a text message from a straight Muslim friend saying simply, you are my community, you are my people. That is what I ask of my straight friends and of my Hindu community, to simply state this, tell me I'm your community, that I'm your people. Tell me that I can be both Hindu and gay and married to a Muslim, and you understand and hold space for all of me. The immortality that we seek will only be realized when we understand that our liberation is indeed tied together. The peace that we deserve can only come from loving one another. Yesterday, I fasted in solidarity with my partner and my extended family that is observing Ramzan or Ramadan. I had the opportunity to break fast and host an iftar surrounded by community, Muslim and non-Muslim, gay, queer, straight, female-bodied, male-bodied, everyone in between, gender non-conforming, South Asian, black, Arab, white, Latino, and more. This is what my immortality looks like. It's a rainbow. May our collective liberation come soon. May our Latino and Latina queer folk who have been taken from us too soon rest in peace. Que descanse en paz. Hi, everyone. My name is Sahar Shafkat. I'm a founding member of the Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity. And I want to read out our statement to you. But I want to be clear that I'm doing this with a very heavy heart. My heart has been very heavy for my brothers and sisters who were slain on Saturday night. The Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity is devastated by the massacre at the Pulse Gay Nightclub in Orlando on June 12, 2016. Our thoughts and prayers are with the victims and their loved ones. Although the facts are still emerging, as LGBTQ Muslims, we feel compelled to speak out, to appeal for solidarity, and to ask that we resist assigning blame to any individual or group beyond the shooter. The senseless loss of life is a reminder of the violence that LGBTQ people continue to experience despite many recent legal gains for our communities. It is also not lost on us that this horrific tragedy occurred during LGBTQ Pride Month and the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which is typically a period of peace and self-reflection. It pains us that these periods of joy, celebration, and peace have been violently marred with horror. There is no religious justification or precedent in Islam for mass shootings targeting any population, regardless of identity. This tragedy is a reminder of the terrible harm that can result from the wide availability of guns and acts of violence by individuals whose own values conflict with those of most people in the U.S., Muslims included, which hold human life to be sacred. With that in mind, we call for a renewal of the national conversation around strengthening gun control. This tragedy cannot be neatly categorized as a fight between the LGBTQ community and the Muslim community. As LGBTQ Muslims, we know that there are many of us who are living at the intersections of different communities and identities, and we recognize the complexity of these experiences. No community is a monolith, not Latinx, Muslim, queer, or trans. We honor the lives lost and those impacted by this tragedy, the vast majority of whom were Latinx. We stand in solidarity with communities of color and all who fight for the collective right to pursue lives of dignity and self-determination without fear of harm. We reject attempts to perpetuate hatred against our LGBTQ communities as well as against our Muslim communities. We ask all people to resist the forces of division and hatred and to stand against homophobia and transphobia as well as against Islamophobia and anti-Muslim bigotry. Let us instead recommit ourselves to working towards a world without hatred and prejudice. We ask our straight Muslim allies, some of whom have stood in solidarity with us, to build support for LGBTQ people and to oppose homophobia and transphobia in whatever guise it presents itself. We ask our non-Muslim allies, especially within the LGBTQ community, to stand with us against Islamophobia and anti-Muslim bigotry as we work to end homophobia and transphobia. And to all peace-loving people everywhere, we ask for your compassion and we ask for your support at this very difficult time for us. Thank you.
Salam, shalom, peace, Ramadan Mubarak, and Pride Mubarak. Before I start, I want to say that the majority of queer Muslims in the USA are black, and the majority of Muslims in the USA are black. I reached out to some of my black queer Muslim siblings, and they all declined. Some due to work schedules, some due to emotional turmoil, and some not wanting to get the spotlight because it's hard enough to get a job. Are there any black, queer Muslims in the crowd that would like to talk instead of me? All right. I guess I'll read what I wrote then for this event. I cried reading about what happened to my queer and largely people of color siblings. The night before, I was celebrating Ramadan at a queer club with largely black and brown people, just as many of my Sufi forebears had. That could have been me, I thought. When I heard that the shooter was Muslim, I thought that could be any homophobic I've encountered at the masjid or church or science lab. I knew people were going to again try and pit my Muslim communities against my queer communities, even though I largely knew them as one and the same. This is not a new thing. Queer Muslims were alive and well during the Prophet Muhammad's time, too. Rumi, a Muslim Afghan refugee who loved a man called Shams, wrote hundreds of poems dedicated to him. One of his poems goes like this. Dance when you are broken open. Dance when you've torn the bandages off. Dance in the middle of the fighting. Dance in your blood. Dance when you are perfectly fine and free. I read the news about the names and faces in the stories and I cried. I heard that this was the deadliest shooting and I wondered about Wounded Knee. That was the worst mass shooting in American history, perpetuated by government forces against Native Americans. And that was a part of the erasure of my Native siblings. I thought about the oppression against Muslims and queer people and how it relied on the erasing of Native Americans and how my Native Muslim queer siblings felt. fellow queer Muslims. It's in these moments we're again confronted with the mainstream homophobia, transphobia, and queerphobia of our Muslim communities, largely exported to us, and the mainstream Islamo-racism from our queer communities. It is moments like these that our Muslim communities can learn from. We can reaffirm the humanity, divinity, and liberation that's found in the queerness of others and in ourselves. It's moments like these that Americans can learn from Florida gun culture, the invasion of Afghanistan, which has, I should say, an extensive homosexual and queer history, and confront the false dichotomy between queerness and Muslims, used as an excuse to dehumanize and colonize Muslims. Often, it is hard to tackle the homophobia now common in our Muslim traditions because we fear more Islamic racism will befall our families and bodies. But it is so important to stand up to passive and overt queer phobia in our spaces. In the same way bacterial cultures flourish under certain conditions, we must critically look into our hearts and ask, what cultures do we induce in the incubator of our minds, homes, masjids, and courthouses? There comes a point that even if you are taught to believe in oppressive laws, you must ask yourself, are unjustifiable rules more important than humans? What is the price of an untenable patriarchal utopia? What is the size that divinity brings me in this huge queer universe, but amongst limited human minds? And am I honoring the God that lives within us all? I want to end with the English version of the Muslim prayer when we hear people have passed away. From the divine we come from, the divine we are, and to the divine we go back. Thank you. Amen.
Hello and salam alaikum. My name is Palmer, and I'm with the Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity, and I am former co-chair of the LGBTQ Muslim Retreat. For some people, all they can do is cry. For others, this is a pattern of loss to gun violence that we have become all too familiar with. We stare in stunned silence because a country with so much privilege, we are told we are not able to stop this. Let us remember our siblings in Orlando, the LGBTQ, Latino, Latina, Latinx siblings. They have suffered an incredible loss, and they need our love, support, and compassion. As a member of the LGBTQ Muslim community, I feel this in two ways. The incredible sense of loss, we did not need to experience this loss. And the incredible sense of anxiety as we go out into the world to see what type of anti-Muslim backlash occurs. This tragedy occurred during Ramadan and Pride, both periods of rejuvenation and strength and celebration for my community. We must recognize that this is part of a community. This week we have seen mainstream organizations that can't even print the letters LGBTQ when recognizing this tragedy. That perpetuates what we are experiencing. Islamophobia, homophobia, and transphobia are all rooted in hate and fear. We cannot combat homophobia with Islamophobia. We must say no to hate. We must reach out with compassion, love, and strength. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lydia Brown, and I've been in D.C. intermittently for the past couple of years. I'm here right now because as a queer and genderqueer trans person of color, and as a disabled person of color, I am scared as f- because our Congress is marking up a bill that will erode the rights of psychiatrically disabled people like myself and my friends, a bill that will erode protections for queer and trans people that could place our lives in danger by making it easier to share our medical information with people that we might not be safe having it shared with, that will make it easier to lock up people like me because instead of naming white supremacy and toxic masculinity, we instead blame disability and mental illness for gun violence. Yeah. I'm scared as f- because over the next couple of days and for a long time afterward, the rhetoric that we have to blame people like me who are neurodivergent for gun violence is going to be used in the service of supposedly protecting other people like me who are in all of our talk of being intersectional. We just don't practice it. We use it as a buzzword. We use it as a buzzword. I end up in all these spaces where white gay people are crying about what happened, not for bad reason, but not realizing that it was brown people and Latinx people who were most impacted. Like, in spaces where LGBT isn't even mentioned in some of the news reports. LGBTQ, queer, trans, let alone those words, is not even mentioned. And we come here, and if we don't recognize that there is a disability justice question here, we're all utterly because disability justice means justice for trans bodies, it means justice for queer bodies, it means justice for racialized bodies, and it means justice for us as disabled people. We can't let the rhetoric of we have to unify, we have to unite, we have to be in solidarity become intertwined with the rhetoric of let's use mentally ill people as a scapegoat. The person was mentally troubled. That's why he became a terrorist, because he's brown and committed a mass murder. We can't let that happen. And I'm scared to death of what's going to happen to us disabled, queer, and trans, black, brown, indigenous people of color. That's what I'm scared to death of. And I'm asking each of you to act in allyship here. We're in the city of D.C. People here are involved in activism, are involved in policy, are involved in charity work, our students, our organizers, our laborers working at wage jobs that couldn't come here tonight or who managed to make it just in time. And we have the opportunity more than anybody else in this country right now to prevent our government from enacting state-sponsored violence in the name of protecting us while eroding our liberty. I'm asking for your allyship. This is a disability justice issue. Queer liberation, trans liberation, and racial justice cannot happen without disability justice.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard voices from the vigil against homophobia, transphobia, and Islamophobia held this week at DuPont Circle in Northwest DC. This is On the Ground, Voices of Resistance on 89.3 WPFW Pacifica Radio. I'm Esther Averam. When we come back, queer writer, activist, and artist Alexis Pauline Gums. Stay with us.
It's a long road. Oh. Every day I wake up and turn my phone on. I read the news of the day just as it's coming down. I do my best not to let it get me down. I try to keep my head up, but this is Babylon. This world's in crisis, we try to fight it. This changing climate, with scientists and with politicians divided by it. So many ways we could solve it, but they will never sign it. This mountain's tumbling down, but still we try to climb it. It's in the Torah, Quran, and in the Bible. Love is the message, but somehow we turn to rivals. It's come to people always picking up their rifles. Another school getting shot up homicidal. Some people trying to look fly. Some people trying to get high. Some people losing their mind. Some people trying to get by. And when you look in my eyes, you'll see the sign of the times. We are looking for the same thing. But what if this song's number one? Would it mean that love had won? Would it mean that the world was saved? And no guns are being drawn today. What if everybody had a job and nobody had to break a law? What if everyone could say, yeah, yeah, that it's good to be alive today? I said. People used to feel safer when they would hear a siren. Like help is on its way, but now they only think of violence. Another youth in the streets and police is in a conflict. And now they hear the guns click. Yo,
Ebola. That was Michael Franti again on the Ground this morning. I'm Esther Averam. Well, I have a really special treat in this segment. I'm going to speak to Alexis Pauline Gums, and she just sent this to me as her description, and I'll say something about that afterward. But she uses words as ritual signposts towards a Black feminist future full of love. Alexis is the co-founder of the Mobile Homecoming Project, an experimental archive that amplifies generations of Black queer brilliance, and is widely published. She's a widely published award-winning scholar, poet, and community accountable educator. Alexis is the co-editor of the PM Press best-selling anthology, Revolutionary Mothering, Love on the Front Lines, and the author of Spill, Scenes of Black Feminist Fugitivity, coming out this fall. Welcome to the show, Alexis. I can hear you now.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. And I said I was going to say it because here people want to give other kinds of credentials. And I just thought it was so humble and it was so like down to earth, very grassroots kind of bio. And what I had cut out was Alexis Pauline Gums is a queer Black troublemaker, a Black feminist love evangelist. This is from your website, and a prayer poet priestess, and that you have a PhD in English, African American studies, and women and gender studies from Duke University, and that you were the first scholar to research the Audre Lorde papers at Spelman College, the June Jordan papers at Harvard University, and the Lucille Clifton papers at Emory University during your dissertation research. So I thought I was really impressed by that, but I love your description as well.
Thank you, Esther.
Well, I wanted to start with your poem, Pulse. I mean, the last time I looked, it had attracted like more than 12,000 views. I mean, what's it up to now?
Oh, I think it's like 62,000.
Yeah. So tell me how it came about. I played a snippet of it at the very top of the show. The voice and perspective in it is, it's as if you are speaking about someone you know who was killed at Pulse at the nightclub in Orlando and that you knew personally. And I'm wondering if it was just making that personal connection through the creative space.
Yeah. So the reality is I don't know any of the people who were killed at Pulse. And the poem came out of the fact that I never will get to know them.
Right.
So the poem was my ceremony for mourning that, and all of the love, all of the commonality, identifications, the possible joy that we could have had together that was lost the moment that all of those beautiful queer and affirming Black and brown people were murdered. So it's what I felt outrage about was the fact that I don't get to be in community with any of these people now. And the poem was my attempt to say, but I still get to love them. I still get to imagine their smiles and their faces. I still get to imagine what it would be like for us to be together and to mourn the fact that the reality is we will never get to be together. But at least I can seek to meet them. I can seek to love them and definitely seek to remember them as part of our collective mourning.
Now, almost, if not all, of the people killed were brown and Black people, but most of the talking heads I see on, you know, mainstream media, obviously, you know, are not Black and brown, you know, commenting on the tragedy. And yours is actually the only creative expression by a Black person I saw online. I'm sure there may be others, but I didn't see any others. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are about, you know, these complex issues of identity and society. Some in the last clip, you know, used the term intersectionality. Mm-hmm. What are some of these issues raised by the massacre? And I know this is something that we could talk about for an hour, but, you know, just kind of give us some thoughts.
Yes. I mean, I think it really does show the importance of the Black feminist concept of intersectionality in a moment like this. I think it's important to lift up and raise how it did come through the Black feminist tradition. And I also don't want us to always have to do this work of especially teaching a media machine that consistently criminalizes and dehumanizes and ridicules Black and brown people in general and Black and brown queer people in particular. I don't feel like we should have to teach them how to represent the lives lost with dignity. I feel like that actually could be a waste of time because our dominant media was designed to do exactly the opposite, which is part of the reason why shows like this and community media are so important. But I noticed that in my desire to correct all of the mistakes and misnamings and conflations in the dominant media, I was losing my vulnerability and my own opportunity to really feel the emotions that I feel about this and to mourn these loved ones who have always been complex, multi-layered beings worthy of love. Everybody who loves them knows that. Everybody who loves themselves as a queer person of color knows that. And so I wanted to write this poem because they are my community. You know, these folks and these spaces, like I'm the type of person that goes to Latino night at the gay club, right? These type of spaces are how I've learned to wonder about and love myself. So I really, there are many ways we could talk about this issue, and there are many critiques that are, that people are rightfully raising. And I just really hope that we can focus inward enough and do the work that it takes to love each other deeper through this. And and speak to each other more urgently, more passionately, and with love.
You know, something you just said reminded me of the fact that the identity of being a Black Latino or Latina, mm-hmm. and the term I've heard Latinx during this week, is not really explored. Like, it's either, you know, you're a Latino or you're Black, but, you know, it doesn't recognize the reality that Latino is not a race and that there are millions of Black Latinos throughout the diaspora. Mm-hmm. So, meaning Spanish speaking Black people, I suppose. And have you had any comments, or do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that's absolutely true. Not only are there many Latino people, Latinx people of African descent, but also what I was speaking to in the poem was the way that our cultural spaces have been very much intermixed. So even people who are of African descent who don't specifically speak Spanish or don't specifically, you know, I'm talking in the poem about how I would be mispronouncing things when I'm in Latinx spaces.
Exactly.
Celebrating. I think that those spaces are our spaces. And when we think about the generation of hip hop, we think about our entire musical culture that we're celebrating right now. We understand that that's a collaborative space that we create and recreate. And so I don't like the absenting of Latinx people of African descent and their reality and the fact that they are were in that specific space and are in so many spaces from the conversation. But I also don't like the absenting of the Black people who were in that space to celebrate, because they love to be around other queer people of color. They love Latinx culture and celebrate it like I do. And there are definitely people in there who may not have identified as of Latinx identity who were Black folks in that space and who are part of that community.
Now, at the event I attended that we played earlier in the show, a huge vigil at DuPont Circle here in D.C., there was a real concerted effort by the activists of color there to lead in the action and therefore to frame the event. And I'm wondering, has this tragedy pushed people of color in the LGBTQ community to claim a certain unique space and their own narrative as people of color?
I think so. I think it's very appropriate that people of color should be framing the conversation, should be in leadership of these events, because these spaces that center Latino culture, Black culture, queer self-expression are our spaces, and the people in those spaces are us. People of color in the LGBT community don't suddenly have a different narrative to put forward, right? That was already the case. And I think that this horrible tragedy might be forcing LGBTQ organizations and other organizations that don't value the leadership of people of color to realize how inept they are in addressing the reality of our lives and deaths. Mm. I think most people of color have already noticed this, have already known this, and also have been harmed by the racism in white LGBTQ institutions, white disability justice institutions, all of these ways that white supremacy impacts us. But it's not news to us. I think it's absolutely right that people would step to the forefront and frame these issues, but it's not as if queer people of color haven't been thinking in these intersectional ways for many decades and generations.
So what has been some of the feedback you've received to your poem Pulse?
I was really surprised that so many thousands of people shared the poem and the video, but I did know that it had to be shared. And I first wrote the poem just to make space for my own feelings, and I didn't know if I would ever share it. I just was grieving, and I needed to write about it for myself, and specifically my feelings, you know, not my analysis, not my political intervention, although those things are also real, as I've, you know, been speaking to you about them right now. Mm-hmm. I made it as a ceremonial space where I could just love the people who are lost and claim them as my loved ones, even though now I'll never be able to meet them and hug them. And many people have told me that the poem made space for them to finally feel their feelings about this and to finally release the tears. Many people said, now I finally was able to cry. And I think that that's the purpose of my poetry. I think people had been holding back because of the unsafe space of the media, because of the push to always say something smart. But the purpose of my poetry is really to be a ceremony that makes something possible that wasn't possible for the poem. And sometimes what feels impossible is just to actually feel the grief that we have and to know that it's important for us to feel that. Sometimes we're afraid to feel it because we feel like we'll never be able to come back from it, because there is so much to grieve over as people living at the intersection of multiple oppressions. But yeah, I didn't know until after I finished writing this poem that I would need to share it. I write poems every day. Most of them I don't share with anyone. But I knew that the ceremony in this poem wasn't just for me. It was really for all of us who insist on love in the face of death.
Well, I've been speaking with Alexis Pauline Gums, a queer Black writer, artist, and activist based in Durham, North Carolina. Thank you, Alexis, for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you for this work.
And we're going to try and go out with her poem, but that will do it for us on the ground this morning. Thanks again to Alexis Pauline Gums. Thanks to Chantel James, Floyd DJ Waheed, Lydia Curtis. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. I'm Esther Averam. Thank you so much for listening this morning. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please don't forget to like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Our Facebook page is this page with the green letters that say On the Ground. Now stay tuned for the LSB show on Community Watch and Comment, the open mic edition, and then our National Clemency and Criminal Justice Reform Radiothon with Roach Brown and Nkechi Taifa, and many more special guests. Raise your voice out there. Peace.
This poem is called Pulse, and it's for our loved ones in Orlando who we didn't get to meet. I was going to see you. I was going to dance in the same place with you someday. I was going to pretend not to notice how you and your friends smiled when you saw me and my partner trying to cumbia to bachata, but I was going to feel more free anyway because you were smiling and we were together and you had your stomach out and you felt beautiful in your sweat. I was going to smile when I walked by. I was going to hug you the first time a friend of a friend introduced us. I was going to compliment your shoes instead of writing you a love poem. I was going to smile at you every time I saw you and struggle to remember your name. We were going to sing together. We were going to belt out Selena. I was going to mispronounce everything except for amor and I. I was going to covet your confidence and your bracelet. I was going to be grateful for the sight of you. I was going to scream, yes, at nothing in particular, at everything especially, meaning you beyond who I knew you to be. I was going to see you in hallways and be too shy to say hello. You were going to come to the workshop. You were going to sign up for the workshop and not come. You were going to translate the webinar even though my politics seemed out there. We were going to sign up for Creating Change the same day and be reluctant about it for completely different reasons. We were going to watch the keynotes and laugh at completely different times. I was going to hold your hand in a big activity about the intimacy of strangers, about the strangeness of needing prayer. We were going to get the same automated voice message when we complained that it was not what it should have been. We were going to be standing in the same line for various overpriced drinks during a shift change. I was going to breathe loudly so you would notice me. You were going to compliment my hair. It isn't fair because we were going to work to Beyonce and Rihanna and the Rihannas and Beyoncés to come and the Beyoncés and Rihannas after that. We were going to not drink enough water and stay out later than our immune systems could handle. We were going to sit in traffic in each other's blind spots listening to top 40 songs that trigger queer memories just outside the scope of marketing predictions. We were going to get old, and I was going to wonder about the hint of a tattoo I could see under your sleeve. I was going to blink and just miss the fought-for laughter lines around your liner-loved eyes. I was going to go out for my birthday, but I didn't, and you did. We were going to be elders just because we were still around, and I was going to listen to you on a panel we didn't feel qualified for and hear you talk about your guilt for still being alive when so many of your friends were taken by suicide, by AIDS, by racist police, and jealous ex-lovers, and poverty, and no access to health care, and how you had a stable job you suffered at until the weekend, how you avoided the drama and only went to the club at Pride, and so here you were, with no one to dance with anymore. I was going to see you and forget you, and only remember you in my hips, and how my smile came easier than clenching my teeth eventually, and how I finally learned, whatever it is, I still haven't learned yet. I was going to hear you laugh and not know why and not care. Our ancestors fought for a future, and we were both going to be there until we weren't. And so I don't know if it would hurt more to lose you later after knowing you. I don't know if it would hurt more to know you died on your own day by your own hands or any of the other systems that stalk you and me and ours forever. I only know the pain that I am having, and that you are not here to share it. You are not here to bear it. You were going to pass me a candle at the next vigil. But now, I am pulse. And now, you are flame.